Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Joining me as usual at the studios of CBS Interactive, Scott Rohde of PR agency House Party.
Hey, Tim.
And our guest today, your stereo boss, Guy Dobson.
Hi, guys.
This week in radio ratings, classic rock comes out swinging, but no breakthrough for Nova's Merrick Dawes and Ricky Lee. In TV, Nine's Families of Crime bombs, Aussie Top Gear reveals its presenter lineup, and MasterChef powers on. Did the Cannes Lion jury fall for the Twitter hype? Scott's boss has a rant. What's going on at Photon? And new ads from the Combank and the A-League. We turn first, though, to Guy Dobson. Now, it's good timing that we're talking this week with the ratings out.
Yes.
Not a bad set.
Look, we've had a pretty good year so far in terms of the content we've delivered and the ratings that have come from it. Very happy with Triple M. It's growing in all the right areas. It's growing slowly, which is great. It means, you know, the audience we're garnering is going to be a much more loyal audience as we move forward. We're not seeing massive jumps that, you know, massive spikes that could leave us in a couple of surveys' time. You know, so there's no real ambiguity and anomalies within the audience we're gathering at the moment. So it's a slow build. Melbourne and Sydney, 2MMM, 3MMM.
So did you get nervous that Classic Rock would take a chunk out of 3MMM?
I'm nervous at every radio station, Tim. From Classic Rock to MTR to even 2Day FM and Fox in Melbourne and Sydney, respectively. Opposition comes from within and it comes from without as well. So Classic Rock per se specifically, you know, I mean, our in-house research is and when we look at our own brands primarily, showing that, you know, Triple M's perpendicular. Both breakfast shows, Eddie in Melbourne and the Grill Team in Sydney, are certainly from our research internally, are going through the roof. When we see that kind of research, you get nervous that result won't come through for you at some stage. But we don't really have a look at the opposition and how they're doing.
It's
in our own backyard.
So is it true that Triple M have suddenly started using the words classic rock quite a lot more themselves?
One might say it's classic defence. Number two is the fact that, you know, I was program director of 2MMM in Sydney through the 90s and the early part of the 2000s. And, you know, our slogan was from classic rock to new rock, the great classics, the best new rock. We've used permutations of that through the years. So, A, it's not new. B, it's part of our heritage. If you look at the music makeup of 3MMM Melbourne and Sydney, it's 80s, 90s and new stuff. 80s and 90s classified as classic rock. We actually started using that slogan August 17 last year. That's when we blew up the last incarnation of breakfast shows in Melbourne and Sydney and started with the Grill Team and Eddie. That's when we started rebranding 3MMM as the quintessential rock station for Sydney and Melbourne. And that's when the sub-slogan of from classic rock to new rock came in.
Well, let's talk about Eddie, because I guess that's quite a big investment for you to bring in that team with big names. What sort of share do you need to do to make it worth your while?
Look, I've been quoted before, so I'm not talking out of school here. We reckon if Triple M Sydney stays in the sixes or gets to the sixes and stays consistently in the sixes, we'll be doing pretty well. And in Melbourne, in the sevens. I mean, we're not after grandiose share here. I mean, we're really, really happy having the Today Network, specifically in those markets, Melbourne and Sydney, Fox and 2Day, doing double-digit numbers. And it works best for us as duopoly if that happens as well. And Triple M sits, just ahead of the pack in around sixes and sevens. So, you know, we've done the work up on that, and that's pretty much where we need both of our stations in those markets to sit. If Triple M was to do tens and elevens, I'd be extremely happy. It would mean that at some stage, you know, we used to use the old saying, rob Peter Harvey to pay Paul Thompson. At some stage, it's going to cannibalise our sister stations, you know. Might call them the cash cow, if you like, and we don't want that to happen. So, we've worked out that, you know, if Triple M sits within that band, I've mentioned before, and the Today and Fox stations are still dominant, then it's a pretty good business.
Now, what about Brisbane? Because Brisbane's there's a lot of turmoil in that market at the moment.
Yeah, look, it was the last station that DMG launched Nova in. And, we suffice to say, made a few mistakes, certainly on B105 in the early days. They launched it probably the best of all their stations, because it was the last one to go. And they had a pretty good team up there. So it's been a long, hard fight up there. Still a tight market. And Brisbane, you know, I'm from Queensland, so you know, they're early adopters. They love something new up there. I think when B105 launched in 1990, bang, straight to number one from FM 104, Triple M as it was then, within one or two surveys. I mean, they adopted things pretty quickly up there. So full marks to them. They did a great job. So it's still a tight market up there. B105 have come back with a vengeance, got a great breakfast show up there, great format. And, you know, in 18 months, we've managed to claw back that number one position, which is no mean feat. It's a great team up at B105.
And I guess the fight now is Nova are going to come back again now that they've got their breakfast sorted.
You know, Nova, ARN with Mix. I mean, you know, the, unless they actually physically turn the transmitters off, we've got enemies coming from wherever, especially when you're number one in the major cities. So, you know, we treat everyone with respect, and we treat all stations like they're coming after our audience. And as I said earlier, it's not corporate speak, you know, we're a better network when we look at ourselves introspectively and work on our brands and worry about what our core listeners want out of our brands.
Now, moving away from ratings, BRW brought out their annual list of the 50 best places to work. Oz Stereo made that list.
Yeah, number 24.
Yes.
Number 24. Very upset we were that high up, actually. We thought we'd be at least number one or two.
So what is the criteria? What have you done to qualify for that, do you think?
It was a massive staff survey that we had to send out on behalf of BRW, so that the criteria were many. And too long to list here now. We'll have one of those James Manning Media Week-like podcasts if we sat here going through that.
Tight and bright is the watchword. Well, tight and bright.
Tight and bright. I think I think it's all about environment. It's all about incentive. It's all about work-life balance these days.
Your staff all knock off at 4 o'clock?
Yeah, look, you know, we came in at 24. if we had to come in at 1 or 2, they probably knocked off about 3 or 3:30. But look, it's over 740 employees around Australia. It's a big organisation. We can please most of them most of the time, and you know, we've got a great HR department that makes sure that that we're doing the right things, and it's, you know, that. As I said, we were absolutely stoked to be on that list, number one. We thought we might be a bit higher, you know.
Now, another announcement you made this week is Hamish and Andy, Caravan of Courage.
Yep.
Some of their content from that is coming to the UK on Absolute Radio.
Yeah, look, Hamish and Andy, I mean, those boys are a phenomenon. We all know that.
You're going to keep them?
We're in negotiations with all our major talent at the moment. So you know, we help those guys get across the line in New Zealand. So they broadcast there. They broadcast in Dubai, of all
Dubai,
weird places.
Dubai 92, I believe.
And now Absolute in London, the old Virgin.
Yeah.
So, I mean, have talent will travel, which is quite remarkable for an Australian radio show.
So I suppose the question is, if they're a big hit in the UK and been on the Graham Norton show this week and that sort of thing, could you see a time where perhaps they are syndicated but out of the UK, for instance? Would they still be any good to you?
You know,
there?
With those guys, anything is possible. Would they be any good? Those guys on our airwaves in any way, shape or form would be exceptional for us. You know, we love those guys. They've done us a great service through the years. We're talking to them now about the future. You know, we'll just watch this space.
Do you think you'll keep them?
We think we'll keep everyone, Tim. We're very confident. We're a very confident radio group.
Okay, speaking of...
Hang on, Scott hasn't said anything here. What's going on?
Yeah, I just sent Sheldon and I'm listening.
Are you listening to my dulcet tones now?
It's very, very relaxing right now. Plus, I've only had an hour and a half sleep after watching both football games last night, so I'm pretty much trying to wake up right now.
Scott comes into his own when we talk about things PR. So let's talk about a PR crisis you dealt with. Kyle and Jackie O, that behind you now?
Well, the ratings would suggest that, and the revenue certainly suggests that as well. You know, we learned from that. How to handle the media.
What was it actually like being inside that storm? Because it must be, you know, you have day after day where it's relatively normal life, bit of a story in the paper, and suddenly it's all about you and the network, and it's what everyone's talking about. That must be quite a strange experience.
Yeah, look, all I can say is we learned a lot. We learned a lot about our systems and our processes. We learned a lot about our contracts. We learned a lot about how to handle the media. And, you know, with things like this Mumbrella podcast, it's a new world order with the media. You know, you got to feed the beast. You can't just sit here and say, you know, no comment, we'll get to that when we can. But we certainly didn't want it to be trial by media either. Mm. So we were very, very aware of that. So, look, we handled it the best way we could at the time, And then, of course, we had the other sort of thing that happened a couple of months later as well. So we learnt from the first instance and we're better equipped for the second instance and we'll be better equipped for any other drama, certainly PR drama in the future as well.
Was that your worst crisis of all time? Would you say?
Worst crisis of all time?
What would you say with that? Is it that or was it something in the past or something still to come?
Once again, we'll do a James Manning-like Media Week podcast if you want my worst crises of all time. Certainly from a talent slash PR point of view, yeah. But, you know, getting knocked off by a DMG 5 to 6 years ago at Triple M and 2DFM is pretty bad too. I mean, you know, the crisis comes in all shapes and sizes.
Now, briefly, digital radio. Yep. What opportunities does that give the network, do you think?
Look, we've launched Radar, which is primarily a radio station giving back to the new music community, young Australian bands, which is great. And, you know, we play the best of those on Triple M and 2Day. And we're going to build up a really, really big sense of community online. And primarily at this stage, they sit as online radio stations. The new one we're about to launch is Barry. It's a comedy station, sits right in the middle of that comedy community throughout Australia. If you get onto MySpace Comedy, have a look at how many comedy web pages there are around Australia. There's thousands of them. So, you know, we want to tap into some of that as well. And a breeding ground for new talent for us as well. So look at the economies of scale there. With a Barry, we repurpose our content. We deliver a unique proposition of the digital radio world. Sits as an online station that we can build a community on. And we can develop some new talent, call it off-Broadway, if you like. I mean, our no-vacancy sign is pretty much up around the Today Network and the Triple M Network in terms of airtime to give talent, you know, to groom talent. But As a digital radio station off Broadway, we can just whack our new our Hamish and Andy wannabes on there, our new guys, and sort the men from the boys out. And look, it's going to work brilliantly for us.
And the other opportunities for the sort of fixed time period stations as well that come up for, you know,
The event channel at the main stage, the stuff we do on the main stage, like the Pink broadcasts and the AC/DC channel. Yeah, I mean, that's all good stuff. And clients want to, you know, if they want to play in that environment, we have that there for them as well.
So is digital actually making money yet?
Digital for us is making money because we look at a bundling thing, and look, we're not spending much on it, to be really honest with you guys. It's low cost. If you look at our business, you'd have $5 signs next to FM, you'd have, you know, half a dollar sign next to online, you'd have no dollar signs next to digital. But it's about ticking boxes for the future. It's defensive. It's strategic. It's a place we have to play. I mean, people have to understand. It's not, you know, we haven't been asked to play. We haven't been told to play in this space. You know, it's legislated, and you know, as for its future, I think at this stage the nexus is pretty much online.
And are the advertisers and the media agencies are they seeing the story? Are they supporting it?
Yeah, look, we've had some decent support from a couple of those pop up stations as you've termed them. Pink Radio had a sponsor on board. AC/DC Radio had a sponsor on board as well. Lady Gaga Radio had a sponsor on board as well. We've got a sponsor raring to go for Barry. So, you know, we're making money out of it. It's, as I said before, it's you know, FM's the main game.
You can announce the Barry sponsor now if you want.
I don't actually have the complete credit line in front of me here, Tim. And, you know, you can't just do... See, I got you. Look, see, he's awake. Scott's awake.
Yeah, I'm awake there, yeah.
You can't actually do a half-hearted sponsor shout-out, mate, without having the correct credit line. You get in trouble.
Journalist trying to stick.
Now, just finally, Triple M, their opportunity to take that brand forward.
Well, we think we are. If you've got any other ideas and suggestions for us, Tim, that'd be great.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the Slash...
the Slash campaign. Oh, in terms of marketing. Oh, I'm sitting here with our PR woman from Sydney, and she's giving me the wind-up here. Let me have a look at this. You've got Slash marketing.
Dr. Isn't it Dan nice? Campaign. There's even a little queue of talking points.
Yeah, look, Craig Bruce, our head of content for Austereo, came up with that concept of Slash. So we started talking to his management, and that all happened. And I've got to say, the 45-second commercial we're about to launch this week is nothing short of sensational for our brand. And it came with an on-air tactic as well, and a whole stack of other stuff, billboard photos. And so as a purely integrated campaign using him as the doyen of rock guitarists, it's been sensational for Triple M in terms of reinvigorating the brand, letting our core audience know we're back after 30 years as a rock station. And, you know, only one station rocks, Triple M. That's pretty much the line. And, you know, as a figurehead for that movement, you couldn't pick someone better than... Well, maybe you'd like Joe Satriani.
Really, no, really, maybe. Really. No. That'll do. Slash will do nicely.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, we're very happy with the way that's turned out.
Guy, that's where we have to leave it. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Scott. And good luck with the rest of your podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, TV. Now, in television this week, Channel 9's true crime show, Australian Families of Crime, pretty much fell off the radar, just scraping 500,000 viewers. Top Gear finally revealed its presenters for the Aussie version of the show, and it's deja vu for MasterChef, as it comes top of the ratings once again, and in fact, by Wednesday night, more than 2 million. So, excellent stuff. Now, Scott, Top Gear, that's the challenge for Nine, isn't it? Because the gossip was they weren't going to make a local version, yeah, but do some specials. Is it possible to reinvent that show for an Australian market?
Look, I think it's a tough gig. I think, you know, you've got three embedded presenters from the UK that everybody knows and loves. And, you know, if you watch the previous incarnation of the Top Gear Australia show...
This is when it was made by SBS.
Yeah, it's just absolutely atrocious. The guys aren't funny. Yeah, they know their cars, but, you know, you don't ever gel with them. You don't feel like they're part of their friends. You don't feel as though there's this camaraderie there. You just feel like they're thrown together on some kind of hodgepodge show trying to replicate this UK version, which, you know, works because it works. I mean,
now,
it's simple as that.
Though, I mean, Top Gear in the UK originally started as a very dull, very mundane, you know, we're going to recommend you, you know, which Fiesta to buy.
Absolutely, whatever. But it grew, and you're copying the grown format. You're not copying the basic format. They're actually trying to replicate this, the three chairs, the three guys, the massive audience, and I don't think it can be done. And I know there's going to be a US version, I believe. And
really?
Yeah, as far as I know, they're going to be working on a US version. I think that will flop as well. You know what? I think it works if you've got the same guys talking about, you know, from the UK doing it.
Yeah, isn't it about just having patience, though, accepting that it might not be the finished article right from the start?
But you've left with so many expectations, and that's the problem.
Prediction for how it's a while away yet, but we'll hopefully come back to this recording.
It'll be under the million.
The first episode.
Yeah,
I reckon you're wrong.
Well, we'll see then, Tim.
Okay, we'll predict this. So your prediction, give an exact number, and we'll see who comes close.
I'll say,
so we'll come back to this.
I'll say 850,000 for the first, and then I'll drop to about 600.
Okay, I'm going to go 1.6 million. Ooh, I'll see your number,
huge,
and I'll double it. Yes,
huge,
because a lot of marketing will go behind it now. Next up, we talk awards. So, this week it's been Cannes. The Cannes Advertising Festival has been going on in the UK. Going in the Europe, rather. It's South France. Cannes is not in the UK. Do you know, I once had to carry a correction in a magazine that was, contrary to last week's story, the Edinburgh Festival will not be taking place in Doncaster.
Are you serious?
Yeah, someone had been talking about a completely different media festival and it just got the word Edinburgh in their head.
Oh, God, what a disaster.
So, yes.
Have you been to Cannes?
Yes, I have. Yes, I was there the year before last. I guess the most commented piece on our website this week has been the discussion that we had about one of the gold winners, and it's marvellous when Australian agencies win. And this was a gold and a silver for Droga 5 for V Australia, where they had somebody or three people tweet every single minute of a flight to LA. Very, very impressive entry video.
Very impressive. Oh, the entry video was spectacular. I was like, wow, that's amazing. But and then I remembered the campaign and went, no, wait, that was utter gash.
And that's my issue, I suppose, which is why I wrote the piece that got commented on so much, was looking at it. The jury were very impressed with it. Yet of the 30, there were maybe two or three who seemed to even use Twitter. So yeah, most people were writing about something that they knew nothing of, even as consumers, or appeared to know nothing of, even as consumers, which would be a bit like judging a TV award without ever having watched television.
Yeah, I found it a bit strange. Also, I mean, I saw somebody comment saying that, you know, you don't have to use Twitter to be a user of Twitter, that you can still view people's profiles.
That looked like a bit of a misunderstanding to me of how Twitter works.
Yeah,
though,
I was a bit baffled about it. I was like, well, the whole point of Twitter is a conversation. You're getting involved, you're engaging with people, and, you know,
at the very least, you have to follow people in order to experience Twitter. You know, you can't.
Yeah, and if you're just sitting on your chair laughing at the world and saying, well, that's what that person's saying, that's not really Twitter, really. It's like reading a blog page and not know what's going on. Look, I think the campaign was a disaster. I think anything that spams your Twitter feed, you know, is just outrageously bad. And I followed it for approximately 4 minutes before I canned it. Because and then they ran three different Twitter accounts. Again, stupid, you know, so that means you have to follow all three. What annoyed me the most, however, is the fact that Droga5 either had somebody in-house or they employed someone who went across the web, had fake IDs, AstroTurf, they spammed forums, they spammed blogs. You know, they went out and were completely unethical. They were, to me, absolutely out of order to do that kind of thing. You do not, you know, create these fake personas and then go out and try and sell your business. It's just, it's just hack work. That's all it is.
Now, the other discussion around awards judging was ADMA, the Australian Direct Marketing Association.
Yep.
They have got their awards coming up fairly soon. So ahead of the call for entries, they're doing the call for judges. And rather than going for the same old jury, they're trying to crowdsource it. They're asking people to proposed juries. Now, have you ever judged an awards of any description?
Yeah. I judge IT Journal Awards each year.
Now, how was it that it came? How did it come about that you ended up as a judge?
I used to be a tech journalist. I know some people involved, and they gave me a call and said, "Would you like to be one of the judges?"
So it was the old boy network sort of thing.
Yeah, kind of, I suppose. Yeah, you know, and I reviewed different areas each year. You know, it's not like I focus on one area.
But generally, how do you feel about that method of finding judges? You know, you ring up the people you know.
Again, it's one of those things, you know, people trust the people they know. It's one of those things, you know. You know what you're going to get from the person you do know. You know, it's a bit risky if you don't have a clue what they're going to be like.
So you're anti-crowdsourcing in this?
No, I think if you want to crowdsource it. But then again, if you're going to crowdsource it, what's to say where people who, you know, you aren't going to go, well, let's get some judges we know, and you get some fake voting going on, and then you know, you get like 10 people involved that you're friends with, and they're all going to vote for you.
Next, we talk, as usual, the future of digital. Now, in a guest posting on Mumbrella, Simon Van Wyk, Scott's boss from Hot House, which is the sister company of House Party PR, where Scott's from, argued that the future of digital does not lie in social media. Scott, do you agree with your boss?
I agree with him the fact that digital isn't just social media. I mean, so I've said this from the beginning, you know, social media is just a channel, just another area we should be utilising. One thing I did disagree with him, though, was his opinion on, you know, the digital world strategy is the one that will lead the strategy.
Well, it's worth explaining what Simon's argument is.
Yeah. If you want, I can even pull up in front of me and tell you exactly what he said. Maybe I can't.
Well, I can. There you are with your iPad trying to find it on the script. Here I am with my old lo-fi paper version where it's right here in front of me.
I have it in front of me. Don't worry. Just relax. It's just the fact that I just missed my fingers aren't working as well as they used to because I'm still really tired at the moment.
Scott's been watching football all night.
Yes, I have. And I'm sorry that Australia didn't make it through to the next round. And I'm even more sorry that England did. So, yeah, it's one of those things. Simon suggests that that digital is, you know, is where the budgets are going to go and that's going to lead the campaigns, basically. Whereas I think that a good solid strategy will work online or offline. You know, each area should be able to be developed if you've got a good strategy behind it.
I guess the question is, do you have to develop the strategy in the first place with in mind what your channels are?
I think if you've got a solid enough strategy, I think you should know every channel you want to be in, and the strategy should be all-encompassing across all those areas. I think that's the key for the future.
Moving on, troubled parent company Photon has restructured its management in a bid to get its head above water. BMF founder Matt Malewish is going to get a little bit more involved with Photon and become chairman of BMF, while BMF's executive planning director, Jeremy Nicholas, will be promoted to the CEO role. So there's a lot going on at Photon at the moment.
Yeah, it's massive. But then again, Photon's one of those massive companies. So there's always something going on. You know, if they're happy, then, you know, they still seem to move people around. If they're not happy, they still seem to be moving people around.
Yeah, it's probably worth saying, at the time of recording this podcast, Photon shares are still suspended on the ASX, so we don't know how this one is going to come out. Have been for the last sort of getting on for 2 weeks now. Will they try a capital raising? And there's obviously some sort of restructure going on.
Yeah. They've taken quite a hit over the last years. I mean, they killed a few other companies. You know, they've restructured a few other companies. You know, we saw the population obviously dissolved. We saw Geekdom get dissolved. You know, there's all these different agents. And there was obviously, I think they maybe expanded too quickly. They maybe, you know, bought some things that they shouldn't have. And ultimately, they're paying the price at the moment.
Next up, take a look at a couple of new ads. First, CommBank's new offering.
We open on a girl. She will show us all the things that make her happy. Food, of course. Biscuits strongly preferred. And let's see, books. Everything to stay healthy or feel better. And don't forget, music. These are simple things. But what if children who don't have them could enjoy them too? For 93 years, Commonwealth Bank staff have given grants, now up to $10,000 each, to groups helping children in need. Apply by July 30th. She thinks you should hurry. Now the theme line, the logo, and there's a smile to end on.
Well, that was a clip of CommBank's new ad. Seems that they're moving away from their usual comedy routine. No more the inept American advertising agency. What do you reckon, Scott? Did you like the ad?
Look, I love Amelie, but I don't gel with this, really.
It's worth mentioning the director of Amelie stepped in to do this.
I don't really... You know, look, here's my problem with bank ads. You know, they're trying to sell something that they're not every time. I never watch a bank advert and say, oh, I need to go join that bank. I watch a bank advert and say, you just charged me X amount of my fees. You're just greedy bastards. I don't really want to use you. But I have to because you're an evil that I have to use.
I suppose the question for me is, will this ad actually cut through? Now, I was never a fan of the previous incarnation.
I know you weren't.
But it was effective. You know, they had the data to prove that you know, it had delivered the numbers for them. And I suppose the question now is, this is it's beautifully shot advertising.
Beautifully shot.
But Jean-Pierre Jeunet?
Yeah. Jeunet.
The question is, will it, you know, when it's in a block of, you know, six other ads, will it stand out?
It's a very cultured ad. And as I've said before, you know, a lot of TV in Australia is aimed at what I would class as, you know, non-cultured.
This is where you do your elite latte sipping, sitting on a milk crate thing, isn't it?
All I've said is that the majority of people, you know, who watch a lot of the really crap shows on TV, you know, enjoy really crap shows, and I don't think that this advert's targeted well at them.
Now, another ad, speaking of culture or otherwise, is for the Australian Football Federation, or soccer, as some people might know it. Not for the World Cup, though. Let's hear a clip of that one.
Can I help you?
Do you have any body paint?
Yeah. What colour?
Now, Scott, you've already nailed your colours to the mast on this one.
Absolutely.
You joined the comments thread on Mumbrella, so it's worth describing what actually happens in...
Three different ads. I've obviously got one where, you know, a bunch of guys walk up and ask for some green body paint. Some body paint.
You've just spoiled the punchline.
Yeah,
there,
I know. Yeah,
you, really?
Sorry, yeah. Body paint. Look, three of them are standing next to each other. One of them's half painted. The next advert is a bunch of...
Well, and the checkout guy goes, what colour?
Yeah.
And it's actually funny. I laughed.
I laughed as well at that one. Then I watched the next advert, and I watched a bunch of guys in hoodies stealing sheets from someone's line to make a flag. And I went, oh, that's nice. You're painting us as thieves. And then I watched the next one where they basically made it look like all football people are wearing hoodies, hiding in dark corners. And
but then they turned out to be nice.
Yeah, but the point is that, you know, in the UK, where you know, football's very established, as the hoodie is associated with football hooligans. You know, that's what they wear. That's how they hide their identities. And I have an ominous feeling that whoever created this advert is from the UK. And the whole difference is, you know, football is designed for the whole family. These adverts contain no females. The adverts contain no kids. The adverts contain... It just looks like a bunch of hooligans ready to rumble.
Are we taking this a bit too seriously? Because let me put an alternative theory to you.
Put it to me.
Let's start with the final scene of each clip, which shows a mad keen real football fan, so genuinely body painted people, a giant poster sort of floating over everyone's heads, you know, with the sign of the support, and it's telling the story of how that obsession got to that moment. And that's a nice strategy.
Tell me, how many football games you've been to in your life?
More than I could count.
How many times have you seen somebody painted?
Well, but the point is,
how many times?
They're trying to show the obsessive end, and they genuinely show the clip. That's not,
yeah,
you know,
but I
that's
do,
not CGI trickery. That's a real
I
fan
don't
with body
think,
paint.
Yeah, one fan. I do not think that this advert sells football. This is not a football advert. This is
it
not...
wouldn't be as exciting if it wasn't about the people at the extreme end, but the people in the middle, turn up 10 minutes before kickoff and maybe buy a programme.
There's Fanatic fans. Great, brilliant. But you know what? Fanatic fans wear their colours. They don't hide them under hoodies. That's the difference in those adverts. They don't portray the fans as fans. They portray them as bloody thieves. They portray them as skulking hoodie wearers, which no offence against hoodie wearers, but you know what I mean. But they don't portray them as ultimate
fans. Some of my best friends are hoodie wearers.
Well, you would be a hipster.
That, unfortunately, is where we have to leave it. That's all we have time for today. Thank you to my co-host, Scott Rohde.
Thanks, Tim.
And to our guest, Guy Dobson. And thank you to CBS Interactive for use of your studios. Production was by Georgina Pearson. That was the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows.